I wasn't sure if you could hear me. So welcome to the Land O'Sky Weekly COVID-19 Response Call. I apologize, I accidentally pressed the incorrect button, and so I had to dial back into the call. So that's the first time I've made that mistake, but hopefully won't make it again. But appreciate everyone being with us today. We're going to have a update from the governor's office, and also Chris Wall with EQView Strategic will give us a legislative update. And then we'll turn it over. Today's meeting, we're going to focus on the impact of COVID-19 on Western North Carolina colleges and universities and all the things they're doing to respond to this crisis. So Chris says he cannot hear me, but we'll go ahead and I'll turn it over to Drew. And Drew, you can let me know if you can hear me today. So hopefully that you can.
Yes, Nathan, I can hear you perfectly. And thank you for having me and allowing me to speak to everyone here. And thank you for Land O'Sky for hosting this. So I'll give you some quick numbers here. As of today, we have 39,481 laboratory confirmed cases, and there have been 572,677 completed tests. There are currently 812 hospitalizations, and unfortunately, there have been 1,064 deaths from COVID. I'm sure most of y'all saw that on Monday, Governor Cooper had announced a new guidance for education health leaders for K-12 schools and how to safely open their schools. And I know President Roper, as Dr. Cohen said yesterday, former head of the CDC. So I know he's going to be working closely with universities and how to reopen the university system and working closely with DHHS. So there'll be good things coming there. We always, it bears repeating, for people to remember the three W's: wear a face covering, wash your hands frequently for at least 20 seconds, and wait 6 feet apart. And the state is focused on rapidly increasing testing of people who may not currently have symptoms, but may have been exposed to COVID-19. So the state is now encouraging anybody who has attended any mass gathering, which does include protests, to go get tests. Anyone who works in a setting at higher risk of exposure, such as a grocery store, restaurant, gas station, or a child care program, to go get tested. People who live or work in high-risk settings, such as long-term care facilities, homeless shelters, correctional facilities, or food processing facilities, to go get tested. And through DHHS's website, there is now an online symptom checker and also an interactive map to find a testing location near you, with nearly 400 different testing sites across the state. In addition, DHHS has launched a new platform to integrate contact tracing efforts across the state under the COVID-19 community team. And more than 900 local health departments, staff, and other community team members have been trained on the software, and many have begun using it in their ongoing contact tracing work. So that's kind of all the updates I have. Make it short and sweet so everybody else can focus on what they need to talk about. I'll be here for the duration, so if anybody has any questions, feel free to put them in the chat box, or you can email me your questions. And my email is drew.christy@nc.gov. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Nathan.
Thank you so much, Drew. I really appreciate your update. If anyone has any questions, or Drew, you can enter those in the chat box. And you can also, if you want to text my number, which is 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. If you have any questions for Drew in the governor's office. Chris Wall with EQV Strategic is with us, and he's going to give us a brief legislative update. Chris, can you hear me?
I can, Nathan. Thank you. And as always,
I'll turn the call over to you.
Perfect. And as always, thanks for having me on. I'll do my normal start with the federal government, since that's probably the easiest. There's not much to report from the federal government. The Senate has yet to take up or introduce a COVID Part 4 or a HEROES Act response to what the House of Representatives did. The Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, did say about a week and a half ago that he would like to move a package before the July 4th break. So look for the Senate to have something probably not next week, but the week after, the week of the 22nd, I think is when we most likely see something from the federal government. But again, if you're looking at when will the next round of federal relief get down to the states, I think you're probably looking at September or October before we could see a negotiated package between the House and the Senate and something to the president's desk. So that's just something we'll keep abreast of and keep you updated on as we see progress out of Washington, D.C. The legislature.
Chris, what's the likelihood at the federal level for some additional support for state and local governments? Do you think that will be in that package?
So I do think there is going to be, and I tell you why. The thing that we keep that I keep coming back to is the state of Kentucky is in the very similar situation to North Carolina, facing a huge budget shortfall, in addition to all of the local governments within Kentucky. Senator McConnell is up for re-election in November, and I think it will be difficult to envision a scenario where his state and his local governments are petitioning him on a regular basis for relief, which we know they are, and him to say no, and he's in a tight re-election. So we're hoping that's going to move, but it's going to take a little bit of time between back and forth between the House and the Senate to get something ready to go. But I do think there will be local government support in there, as well as economic support for businesses. Any other questions on the federal level?
Any flexibility on the CARES funding that did come to the states part of the first round?
Yeah, that's something that's being talked about on a daily basis. You're hearing that from another number of states. North Carolina obviously has been you know, raising that flag for some time with our federal delegation. And I know it's a topic of conversation. There's two things. The Department of Treasury could provide some additional flexibility, but I think the true anything that states really need, and especially what from North Carolina is looking for, will have to come in the form of legislation. I don't think Treasury is going to end up giving the state the flexibility that it's looking for. So yes, that's where that would be contained, is in that COVID Part 4 package. On the state side, the General Assembly is back to almost normal operations. And when I say normal, I mean the speed in which they are moving. Just a few dates to throw out. Both the House and the Senate will publicly say they are targeting, I think it's June 26th or 27th, whatever that Friday is, as the target adjournment date. I think that's a little aggressive. I think it would probably spill over into that week leading up to July 4th. But we're still, instead of talking 2 weeks, maybe we're talking 3 weeks. So there's a lot to be done in a short amount of time. The big ticket items that are still left that we know are coming is another COVID relief package. So spending some of that $2 billion unspent dollars. Both the House and the Senate have publicly said that they are putting a second COVID package together that they're looking to roll out not next week, but the week after, the week of June 22nd. And the House and the Senate are busy in budget negotiations to unroll the budget or roll out a budget. Again, I think the week of the 22nd. So you could have two really big pieces of legislation coming up here in the next 2 weeks. The sticking point still remains between the House and the Senate, how much of the COVID funds and how much state funds to budget or to spend, because they still are uncertain of revenues because of the delayed tax situation. So I think the House has been pushing to get some more dollars out than maybe what we would anticipate. And obviously the Senate is a little more conservative in their outlook, wanting to either get a better idea from the federal government on what they can do with CARES funding, or at least maybe getting a sense from what revenues will look like. So that's where the budget is currently being, the crux of the negotiations are how much money to actually obligate, given the fact that we're in some unknown territory. You've seen a couple of other, what they call single shot appropriations bills, which is somewhat out of the usual for the General Assembly. I'm told by finance chairs on both House and Senate that's over with, and really the next big spending bills you'll see will be contained in a budget. There was a bill that moved in Senate Finance this morning that local governments may be interested in. It's truly an economic incentive package or an economic stimulus package designed, it's much like the PPP program. It was a grant to businesses that didn't qualify for any state or federal, but there was a third component contained in the bill that created a local government infrastructure fund. That's exactly what it's called. And it would put dollars into local governments to help businesses relocate, expand, or do business, whether they needed a water and sewer, move some infrastructure, anything that they can do to help incentivize businesses to grow. So that was interesting to see. We'll stay on top of that, and it just popped up in the Senate committee this morning. It's got to go through one more Senate committee, and then through the House. But we will see. I think it's probably got a pretty good chance of going. But there are several different pots that are coming down that local governments may be able to access. Nathan, I think those are the high points. And then always happy to answer any questions related to anything that I've talked about or haven't talked about.
Thank you so much, Chris. And one question through the chat. I know, since the federal income tax filing and the state income tax filing has been delayed to July 15th, you may have already answered this in your earlier comments, but is there any desire to try to wait till they know what those hard numbers are? Or are they just going to go ahead and craft a budget until after that time? Go ahead and do that now.
I think we are definitely going to see the General Assembly pass a budget before July 15th. I think the question remains is the size and scope of the budget, and would they come back in and do, basically a second round of spending? That's the real discussion back and forth. I think the House would like to just go ahead and pass a robust budget, and the Senate is a little more apprehensive to do that, given the fact that they are unsure of what the numbers are. Regardless of what they do when they get out, whether it's that July 4th week or the week after July 4th, those of us that follow the General Assembly, I think it would be naive to think that they won't be back in multiple times. If you just think how this thing plays out, if we would see a spike in cases, if the cases, as Drew mentioned earlier, continue to increase, or if we get another round of funding from the federal government, I think the General Assembly is going to be in multiple times between July 4th and December 31st.
Two further questions, and then I'll let you go. We appreciate you joining us, Chris. On the federal side, do you anticipate the $600 enhanced UI benefits? Will that be a part of the next package? I know there's some discussion about that and whether that should continue. And then we've got our colleges and universities on today's call. And I know, you know, they passed some single shot bills. There was a bill to fund the School of Science and Math Morganton campus so it can operate the next year when it opening. But can you give us a little update if you have that? And I hate to put you on the spot of things that are impacted our colleges and universities. I know the UNC system sort of came back with their budget and presented sort of austere budgets, understanding the state is in a significant financial line with the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, happy to, and I'll defer to the folks from the schools on the call, but the Morganton, I know that I think that passed the Senate this week. If it didn't, maybe it was in rules this week, but I think maybe that passed the Senate this week.
It did pass the Senate.
Yeah, that's something that Senator Heiss is very supportive of and seems to have wide support in the General Assembly. So I would expect that to move. I know the UNC system capital expenditures for their capital projects was also in committee today, or actually maybe even in committee right now. That's moving in a standalone. You know, I haven't been following it. I'll defer to the folks on the phone that know a little bit more, but generally those bills pass and it's just a matter of, agreeing to the dollars. But I think that's something that we will see. And then I apologize. Oh, the unemployment insurance. That is something that is, I think what you will see is an extension of unemployment. That is what the Democrats in the House of Representatives or Speaker Pelosi has championed. And then that gets to, the back and forth between Senator McConnell and Senator Schumer. Senator McConnell wants liability protection, and what is it that he will have to get up for Senator Schumer to agree to liability protection? And obviously that could be something that would easily be a get for Speaker Pelosi and Senator Schumer in exchange for liability protection. So we'll just have to watch and see. But, you know, I think if I were placing money on unemployment insurance being extended, I would probably say it will be.
Thank you so much, Chris. Again, we appreciate you providing us these updates on an ongoing basis and appreciate your work on behalf of our local governments and the Council of Governments across the state.
Thank you. Always appreciate
next,
you.
Next, we'll turn it over to our universities. And I think we have Appalachian State University, Western Carolina University, Montreat College, and Brevard College on the call. We may have a few others, and if I've missed someone, but I'll start with our UNC system schools, and then we'll go to our private colleges and universities. Dr. Kevin Frazier with Western Carolina is with us, and he's got a nice Zoom backdrop with the Western logo at Biltmore Park, and he's got his Western shirt on. So, Dr. Frazier, I'll turn it over to you, and then we'll go to Dr. McCracken at App State, and then we've got Dr. President Maurer at Montreat and President Joyce at Brevard on this call. Dr. Frazier, the call is yours.
Good afternoon, neighbors. It's good to see folks. Just like the rest of the UNC system, we moved summer online and are at this point fully into summer. All of our summer terms have basically begun. And so we've moved everything from the undergraduate through the graduate level to online, much like we did the end of last semester. The work right now is preparing for the fall semester. President Roper has indicated that we will all be residential this fall and that we need to provide some kind of meaningful residential experience, but that we're to do so in a way that creates a safe learning environment and a safe teaching environment. And so every institution is being allowed to figure out how they best approach that to meet their pedagogy and the needs of their region. We are going to stick with our opening date at WCU of August 17th, both for main campus in Jackson County and for our instructional site here in Asheville. But we have modified the calendar that we will not have a fall break this year and that we will complete our face-to-face instruction by the week prior to Thanksgiving. When our students go home for Thanksgiving, they will not return physically to campus. They'll do their exams online and conclude at the beginning of December. This is not a small affair to figure out how to, in our case, manage some 12,000 students and be sure that we do so in a good, safe way. We have had an amazing partnership between the regional public and private institutions and MAHEC, and the physicians and researchers at MAHEC have been leading a really great series of instructional seminars that we've all been attending to really think through the issues at hand and how we provide a safe learning environment for our students. Like everybody else, one of the things on our mind is what happens with K through 12. If K through 12 has partial or full at home, that has a lot of impact in terms of students and faculty and staff who have children at home and how we'll manage along with that. You know, we're being really sensitive to the fact, you know, with our state institutions just here in Metro Asheville, between WCU and UNC Asheville, we have a $1.5 billion annual impact. And so working to balance that and make sure that that economic component functions as well as a safe environment has definitely been the hard work right now. We do have a couple of projects as we're talked about in terms of what's going on with state government. Two things that are really important to us at WCU is that the NC Promise, which is the tuition differential that the General Assembly funds, is funded, and the second half of our STEAM plan. We've become a bit notorious throughout the state over WCU's STEAM plan on the main campus, but literally if this thing were to go offline before we have it in place, we're for all intents and purposes unable to use the campus. And so that's been such a high priority for a long time. Even with the challenges with COVID moving forward, we've got some great new things coming online. Some face-to-face, some
Dr.
online.
Dr. Frazier?
Yes, sir?
I apologize for interrupting you, but I forgot the time constraint of President Joyce at Brevard. Can we transition to President Joyce and then I'll come back to you?
Sure thing.
So, I now want to turn the call over to Dr. David Joyce, president at Brevard College, and I was aware of that his time constraint. He's got an upcoming meeting, and I forgot about it. So, President Joyce, the call is yours.
Okay, thank you, and I'll speak quickly. I apologize, Nate, to interrupt Western North Carolina, but I have a meeting with my executive committee of my board in just about a half hour, and I need to get a little my head in that game as well. Interestingly, and Paul Maurer can pick this up from Montreat, after some dinners together as all presidents and chancellors in the Asheville area, where we got to get to know each other and cross the public and private boundaries, at the third dinner, we said, well, this was in January, in fact, it was at my house, and we said, we ought to work together as a body of institutions, residential colleges and universities in the area to do some work together and find some ways to put our collective minds and institutions kind of on the table. And that was in January. And then in March, we were forced into it, went with the COVID, and we've been meeting weekly ever since. And we met yesterday or today, everything rolls into one. Anyway, today. So we meet weekly and we've been coordinating everything from how we open our schools to how the protocols we're using to protect our students, faculty, staff, and the community. And Paul can pick this up in a minute, because he's been critical. One of his board members is the director of MAHEC. And so we've been working with MAHEC to put all the protocols together. We feel like it's better if we can share resources and also follow each other's kind of lead, so that wherever you're going, whenever parents are asking or communities are asking, we can say that we're all doing roughly the same thing. And like Western Carolina and the other institutions, Brevard's going to open on the 10th. Classes start on the 17th of August. We will not have a fall break. We don't want our students going home if we can help it. And we'll be finished at Thanksgiving, trying to avoid the flu season as well. We haven't made a definitive decision for the spring yet because we don't know what's going to happen. And if you listened, as you heard earlier, that Dr. Fauci has said hopefully we'll have a immunization by late in this year or early in next year, and that could be a game changer for all of us. The other issue that wasn't brought up with West Carolina, but we're all struggling with, is what do we do about athletics? We're kind of at the mercy, in our case, of the NCAA, and we're following their guidelines and are working with our conference. But I can tell you that whatever we do, assuming that we can have athletics, it will be a reduced season, try to keep students from traveling, and a lot of other protocols that go along with that as well. But I know that comes up a lot at Brevard College and many of the privates. About half our students are student athletes. And just the last little piece is we work with, you have the dining services, because almost all our students, we have 850 students we'll have this year, and about 700 of them will be living on campus. If you just take Brevard by itself in the town, in Transylvania County, in the town of Brevard, we're the largest cohort body of folks in the county. And if you added all the rest homes, nursing homes, and retirement centers in the area, they still wouldn't get close to the size of what we have living in close proximity, which creates quite a challenge. And like Western Carolina and UNC Asheville, the economic impact they have on the wider community in Transylvania County, we have a $35 million economic impact. So it's a big deal. And it's one of the things that's worked well for the college in this town. I will tell you that not only partnering with our sister institutions of different sizes in the area, we're partnering with the Brevard Music Center, and because they closed their summer program, if you're familiar with what they do, for obvious reasons, and we're partnering with them and using their facilities that are climate controlled to house some students, because we're going to have a shortage of housing anyway, but also to take some of our older students and keep them in cohort groups and have it so we can spread out. And then they also have facilities outside that are covered and somewhat climate controlled that we can move classes and all. So we're following all the CDC guidelines. We have a protocol. I just got it hot off the press. I haven't fully read it. It's 12 pages long, but we're presenting it to our executive committee in just about a half an hour. And I'm sure that they'll because they want to know what we're doing, and they'll approve it as well. But again, I will say that the most unique thing, and I'm talking fast, but the most unique thing that I think that's happening here in Western North Carolina is the public institutions and the private institutions are working together hand in hand to mimic and mirror each other with what we're doing, just a matter of scale. And we're also looking to go after resources as a cohort body as well. And that's a new model for higher education, and I've been in it a long, long time. It's my 25th year as a college president, three different colleges, and I've never seen where the public and the private sectors have come together so quickly and to work so effectively. So I think that says great things for our region, and it certainly says great things for our leaders of the institutions of higher learning. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you so much, President Joyce, and we really appreciate all the work that you and your team at Brevard College do for our region. Certainly, we know the impact that you have, not only in Transylvania County, but for our entire region, and we're grateful for that. I know it's a difficult time with COVID-19. And this is really not the topic of today's call, but want to give a shout out to our higher ed leaders, both at the four-year institutions and at the community colleges, for working together for our region's My Future in Seagull. And we're the first multi-county region in the state that's trying to tackle that, and y'all have provided wonderful leadership. I want to turn it back over to Dr. Frazier, and I sincerely apologize, Dr. Frazier. So that was just my brain freeze, because I forgot about President Joyce's time commitment for his other meeting. So the floor is yours now.
Not a worry at all. You know, I'm all through all of this, I'm continually reminded of the old Churchill quote, never let a crisis go to waste. And even in the midst of all of this, we are working to advance some new programs that we've had call from our community. We will begin a new master's program in outdoor education and experiential learning that'll kick off in Asheville this fall. And then also, Nathan, you will be glad to hear that the data analytics certificate will kick off this fall. And we're going to be doing that as an online program. If there are folks interested that are in their businesses and areas that are looking for big data work and data analytics, let me know and I'll be glad to make those connections. The last thing I'll close on is that in the midst of all of COVID, every higher ed institution, we are all going back to our very core to pivot to make sure that we are also focused on racial matters in our community. That as important as COVID is, race matters absolutely as much. And we are all making sure that we are turning our energies to make sure that we are doing the work we need to be doing as higher education institutions as well. Even in all of these challenging times, I do like to remind myself and our team that the sun has risen 1.7 trillion times and it will rise again tomorrow. And so that the opportunities, even in the midst of crises, are still ahead of us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Frazier. Appreciate your presentation. And I don't know what you anticipate for the fall, but Western Carolina is going year over year with record enrollment. And then I don't know if that will be the case for this fall, but we see a lot of growth, not only in Cullowhee, but with the programs that you have here in Asheville at Biltmore Park. So I want to thank the work of you and your team for your support. I'd like to now turn it over to Dr. Susan McCracken with Appalachian State University. And Dr. McCracken, thank you for joining us. And we appreciate everything that App State does, not only for Western North Carolina, but really for throughout the state. So I'll turn the call over to you now.
Great. Thank you so much, Nathan. Thank you all for having me today. I want to quickly just kind of give you some highlights of what we're doing around how we're serving students, but really want to focus on how we are continuing to work and try to serve our region. And so Nathan has some slides and we'll get to those in just a moment. But we started orientation online this week for first year students. We've already done transfer orientation. We'll do some more sessions of that. Our enrollment looks very promising. We've also been calling every single student. We've called every single student who's planning to come in the fall as a new student, and we are now calling our returning students. And I have been surprised. I've called about 100 returning students, and almost without fail, they have a summer job and they are taking online classes. And so I think that's pretty remarkable, and I'm excited for that. We've also been reviewing applications for distributing our funding from the CARES Act. Every student received $350 who was enrolled with us in the spring semester. And students have an opportunity to apply for additional funding. I think the limit is around $1,000, $1,100, I think. But we are working hard to try to meet their needs. A lot of our families, as you all know, they have those students, their families have lost jobs and they have been ill. But we're planning for the fall like everyone else. And I really want to see students. I normally love the week after graduation because it's really quiet, but it's been that way for 3 months now. And I miss our students immensely. So with that, Nathan, do you mind putting up that the PowerPoint slide that has the gold bar at the top, and the other two documents we could just share with everyone in the chat box. But what I really wanted to, one, I wanted to share with you, and I want your feedback on what you need from us. I know we're a little further north, but we are here to serve all of North Carolina. And so one thing that has been going on is we have several faculty. I think we've got 50 or 60 faculty who have really said we want to do work with our region to understand the impact of this pandemic. And so there's a second handout that Nathan will share with you that has a list of projects that faculty are undertaking. Some of you I know have shared, I know Land of Sky has, and some of the chambers. your data that you've been collecting on the impact of the pandemic on local business. But we're looking at basically assessing social distancing practices in the outdoors and on trailways. We are examining, we have faculty who are looking at crisis like suicide hotlines. And what are the changes in the needs of especially young adults? We're looking at some modeling. How might we model, especially in rural communities where there are going to be additional outbreaks, and how we can be more proactive in preventing those with interventions? And then also looking at the long-term healthcare impacts of COVID-19 on folks who have compromised systems. So we've got several research clusters, and what I would share with you is that you can learn more about it on the website that's listed. And if you are interested in being included in the weekly email from Chancellor Everetts, it gives an update from the university. If you will put your email in the chat box, I'll cut and paste it, and I'll make sure to send that to our communications team to include you. I wanted to mention an initiative that we've been involved in, UNCA and Western, the UNC campuses. It's being led, and Drew, you may know a bit about this, by the Strategic Partnerships arm at the Office of the State Budget and Management and the School of Government. This is an initiative from Governor Cooper's office to identify, I guess, sort of two-pronged. What are the needs of some local governments and nonprofits who are really struggling with cash? And then what are the needs of students who plan to have an internship this summer and it was discontinued or canceled because of the pandemic, or they weren't able to go there in person? So we've been working with the universities around the state to promote 140 positions. It should be plural, not a singular. I messed up there. At 120 sites. And many of those are you all. So I know I've been working with the Henderson County League of Women Voters, Chambers, Burke County Government. We have a young man who's going to be working in the finance office there. Wilkes County is doing a project to do a narrative of the impact of COVID-19 on their community, Second Harvest Food Bank. So lots of opportunities for students. If you have a need in your community, in your agency for an intern or more of a project-based type of work that you need done, again, if you put your name in the chat box or email me, I'll put my email in the chat box when I finish. I'll be happy to connect you with the governor's office. And then finally, I just wanted to mention the work that our SBTDC Center is doing. I know the folks from Western were on last week, but Ron Elmore, who is our director, wanted to make sure that I shared with you that they have been able to assist local business in about $8 million in applications that have been successful to get the federal money to help these local businesses. And he also has a handout that Nathan can share with you when I'm done about some management techniques for basically kind of holding your own as a small business or even a mid-sized business during this time. So I'll end there. And I guess the request I would have for you is if there is something that you feel we could do to help you address some of the challenges that you have, please reach out to us. So thank you for the time, Nathan.
Thank you, Dr. McCracken, for sharing with us. And we will post those resources on the landofsky.org website. If you go to our homepage, there's a COVID-19 link. And if you click that link, we try to place the recordings for these calls and the resources from these calls on that page. So we will share those resources, and also if you can reach out to me anytime at nathan@landofsky.org, and I can get you in touch with any of our presenters if you have further questions of them after the call is over. I'd like to turn it over now to Montreat College President, Dr. Paul Maurer. And Dr. Maurer, I think you're with us. We had a little technical difficulties, so hopefully we're going to try to unmute you now. And so Dr. Maurer, President Maurer, I'll turn the call over to you.
Thank you, Nathan. I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead. And I apologize for any technical difficulties.
No apology necessary. I apologize for not being able to get on to the Zoom. So I'm joining by telephone and appreciate the opportunity to offer a few comments today. Dr. Joyce at Brevard College said it well. The main thing that's really driving what's happening here in the western part of the state is the partnership that has been grown out of personal relationships over these dinners that David was talking about, which began a year and a half ago. It's now moved into this very robust working partnership with the 6 4-year residential institutions here in the western part of the state. That would be Brevard College, Mars Hill University, Montreat College, University of North Carolina, Asheville, Warren Wilson College, and Western Carolina University. And so the 6 presidents have been getting together via Zoom calls on a weekly basis since April. And we invited Dr. Jeff Heck, CEO of MAHEC, to be our medical expert. And so MAHEC very quickly agreed to be the medical expert, and they've provided robust and enthusiastic leadership in helping us create protocols for how to open. All 6 of us are planning to open residentially in the fall, and of course, because we're 24/7 little cities in all of our campuses, there are particular challenges that businesses don't face and community colleges don't face because we're residential. And so we've been in regular conversation with community leaders, with governmental leaders, and then this call partnership with the 6 of us with MAHEC has really begun to bear a great deal of fruit. MAHEC has produced 3 webinars. The 3rd one was this morning, where they're just presenting additional information and evidence, and they've produced a checklist of how to open safely. And so on every one of our campuses, we have scores of people working diligently to open responsibly and safely. We're hearing, we've called all of our students as well and called all of our prospective students, and we are hearing that they're just dying to get back to residential life. They don't want to be with little brother and sister anymore. Their parents want them out of the house. They want to get back on campus. Our enrollments are trending toward a 6th consecutive year of record enrollment for traditional undergrads. We've also pivoted and been able to hire someone in the last couple of months who has tremendous expertise in building online programs. So over the next year, 2-3 years, Montreat's plan is to build out dozens of new programs online. We're adding 4 new programs for this fall online. We'll be adding both undergraduate and master's. We've also added data analytics undergraduate program at the traditional undergrad level for this fall. And that's all a complement to the cybersecurity programs that we launched some years ago. Most of you may be aware that we're affiliated closely with the National Security Agency. They've asked us to take a role of national leadership. And so now we're now creating additional programs that are the cousins of cyber, and data analytics is one of those. So even in the midst of reinventing college life and university life, which is what the 6 of us in every college and university in the country is really doing, is reinventing the collegiate experience. In the midst of that, we're experiencing growth and high level of demand, and the employers continue to want our graduates, particularly in these medical and data-oriented technology fields. So I'll stop there, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Nathan, you might have.
Thank you so much, President Maurer. And again, want to thank all of our institutions that were able to join us today. Lenore Ryan University, Warren Wilson College, Mars Hill, and UNC Asheville, due to some scheduling conflicts, could not join us, but hopefully if they have the opportunity, they can join us on a future call. This will be a question for each of our presenters, and we will, I'll call on you so we can unmute you so you know that when it will be your turn. But what are things that our region can do and employers can do? Because a lot of the interactions that we were able to have previously, we weren't able, you know, aren't able to do in a social distance world. So any guidance that you can provide? And I'll just start with President Maurer.
Yeah, I think to the degree that we continue to supply the workforce that the western part of the state wants and needs, you know, we here at our college have a center for, we call the Thrive Center for Calling and Career. Reach out to the Thrive Center, and we really want to continue to build the partnerships that we have. We're a very externally facing college, and we have built many, many partnerships here in the western part of the state, but really throughout the state and the region. And so I would say reach out to our Thrive Center, to our staff there, and we would love to have our students intern with you and have you have a chance to test drive the experience. And most of our students end up working for those places where they've had an internship.
Thank you so much, President Maurer. Dr. Frazier, Western Carolina, what are ways that our region can support you? Or, you know, often with the restrictions and COVID-19, maybe not be able to have the same interactions we had with the university. So what guidance would you provide on how we can support you and your students?
I would definitely give a second to Dr. Maurer's comments about continuing to do work with our career centers. They are still out there ready to connect with employers in the area to help supply a well-educated workforce. And so we want to continue that work. You know, the truth is we're all, as Susan indicated, we're working hard to continue to do what we do to support our communities. And we appreciate, you know, folks reaching out to us and letting us know how we can tune our resources to best serve the community. We're continuing in Asheville with our professional development and continuing education programs. We've moved those online, but those are high demand programs that we want to make sure we're continuing to do and to serve. And one of the things, as Dr. Maurer mentioned about internships, you know, that's a trickier situation these days, but it's really important that we still have those opportunities for our students. We're glad to work together to make sure we can do that safely for everybody.
Dr. McCracken?
Thank you, Nathan.
Go ahead.
So I serve as the liaison for economic engagement, but I also oversee our Career Development Center. And I will share with you what we have determined as a staff is that our two most important populations are our students and our employers. And I would ask you to please stay connected to us. If you haven't connected to us, now's the time to connect. Whether you have availability to hire or not, we are here to serve our employers. We want to make sure that our students know about the opportunities that will be there in the future. And one of the commitments we have is that we do career meetups every week. We did them all the spring semester, and in the summer we're doing them 3 days a week. And every Tuesday we're featuring an employer, and those could be nonprofits, for-profits, large, small. So I would say, please don't think for any of our institutions that just because you don't have a hiring need that you should not connect with us, because we value your relationship. And we want that relationship, we want it to continue, and we want to continue to grow those. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Dr. McCracken. And we really appreciate y'all all joining today's call. We'll try to post the resources from today's call on our website, atlantasky.org. We'll also try to post the recording from today's call as well. We will also, and the universities and colleges that were not able to join us today, perhaps they can join us on a future call. Would mention my future NC effort. we want to just give a shout out to all of our K-12 and community college and higher ed institutions in our region for their work to increase post-secondary credential attainment aligned with our workforce needs. While that's not related to the COVID-19 crisis, it's certainly related to helping us begin an economic recovery and to meet the talent needs of our businesses during these crazy times. So we try to end these calls by 2 o'clock. So today we'll end a little earlier, but we just want to thank everyone for joining these calls. If you have any suggestions on how we can make them more relevant to you and your organization, please reach out to me. And again, my contact is nathan@landosky.org. We want to provide a forum for our region to share information and to help us better respond to this global health pandemic as well as economic crisis. So I hope everyone stays safe and stays well, and have a great rest of your day.